This totally normal baby shower is going on, and then over on the other side of the room, Joy and somebody else are like, dun, 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 dun. The boy who lived, come to die. Oh, my God. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Parks and Rewatch. I'm your host, Joe.
And I'm Joy.
And this is definitely the first time that we're doing this.
For sure.
The power definitely didn't go off.
What?
And erase like 20 minutes of our recording.
Oh, no.
This is the first time we've done this episode.
Uh-oh.
It's season 6, episode 15, The Wall.
The Wall!
And I'm definitely not salty about the power going off.
No, not at all!
No, so cheerful.
Okay, so it's fine. We're fine. Everything's fine. This is the challenge to not recreate the moment that already was.
Yeah.
But to recreate something new. But, like, I liked the moment that was.
I know.
So I'm just going to channel a little bit of that because nobody knows what that was. So I'm just going to act like it's new and original in this moment. Okay. Plot synopsis. In order to get into the right mind space, I would like to encourage you to just question your very existence in the world.
Here we go again.
Here we go again. All the feelings.
I already did this once today. I wasn't ready for this kind of existential work.
And now I will read to you the plot synopsis, one by one. The layers are being peeled back. What do you want? What do you really want?
Power that doesn't shut off.
Well, then there's that. A chemical romance or a modern bistro with an oak bar? 14 or 15 art vendors? Real unity or separate and not equal? To stay in the place that hurts you the most and yet has your heart, or to try something bigger? What will it be? I'm hoping that you'll find the gift of red pine through the ripping up of your inhibitions. How do you feel now? Does this help your existence any?
No.
What do you want, Joe? Through the ripping up of your inhibitions, what will you find?
Hopefully red pine.
Okay.
I don't know.
Red pine. Red pine. Red pine. Ham and mayonnaise. Red pine. Red pine. Red pine. Ham and mayonnaise.
Except for turnip.
It's fine. We're just going to move on. Episode behind the scenes and trivia. Okay. I found some stuff in the closing credits that I was really excited about. So think back in the day, I found an article that like gave us the revelation that there are lurpuses everywhere, which saying lurpuses makes me think of A Christmas Story where he's like, bumpuses! When the dogs all come in and eat the turkey. So in that article, they talked about how much they loved creating really funny character names. So this is the smorgasbord, the amuse-bouche of these names that we have been waiting for. Here we go. Sydney Ann Endicott. It feels like I'm calling a graduation. She played Madison. Alan McLeod played Trod Frankenstipe. Not Stein. Stipe, which I'm saying intentionally a little lishpy. Robert W. Arbogast plays Clervis Rosewater. This next one I love. Lauren Elizabeth Shaw plays Kim.
Kim.
Just Kim. That's it. Just Kim. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. David C. Scott plays Eagletonian Smith. Is there a Pawnean Smith? I don't know. I don't know. Amber Friendly plays Summer Olkraken Frogfrong. Frog Fong. Benjamin Byron Davis plays Foreman George, which is a fun flippy flop of George Foreman.
I thought you were going to say Benjamin Button Davis.
Not quite. But, you know, it's fine. And then my favorite of all of them, Carol Gutierrez plays Judy Zapozapaz, which I now have practiced pronouncing because of the failed recording. And in that failed recording, we found out that this last name, Zapozapaz, is a palindrome, but it's not just one palindrome. It's the same thing repeated twice.
It's like palindrome inception.
So Zapoz is the whole thing. And then you flip it on itself. So it's Zapozapaz. And then you flip it again. And it's Zapozapaz.
What?
It's amazing. I give Joe all the credit. You are marketing brilliant. Various accolades.
I suppose you might be right.
How proud of you are you? How proud of you are you for that?
Yes.
Imba had some other things to say about the episode. Tom believes Ben's 52 and Adam Scott at the time of recording was actually 42. In the wall removing ceremony, Leslie says, "Tear down this wall," mimicking a speech by President Ronald Reagan in 1987, calling for the removal of the Berlin Wall. Ron Swanson's son is named John. Therefore, both he and his son's first name rhymes with Swanson.
Which it doesn't.
Unless you say it Ron Swanson.
Swanson.
John Swanson. Ron Swanson. Daniel
Sutton. Is fun to say. Try it.
Daniel Sutton. Yeah. When Ben shows Tom his spreadsheet for the proposed dry cleaning chemical business, it's the same budget spreadsheet from when Eagleton, when they did all the stuff with Eagleton, and it has categories like HBO for residents, bottled water for city pools, personal shopper salaries, and other useless expenses. I like whoever caught that. Now it's time for some dives up top. We're talking about baby showers and things. Jackson Pollock and the Kool-Aid guy in the booths. We're talking about banner unfurling, Liam Bonneville, and opening a restaurant. Joe, what are you most excited to hear about?
Kool-Aid guy.
Kool-Aid guy. Me too. All right, let's talk about baby showers and things because I don't like them. Woo! So I just Googled planning a baby shower. You're laughing at me. Why are you laughing at me? Just,
I think the energy going into this second time around is great. Just let's like, talk about this because right. I don't like it. Let's go.
Channeling some Craig. Yep. I just Googled planning a baby shower and I am shocked at how many sponsored posts there are by brands like Huggies, Shutterfly, Martha Stewart, Pampers, Rothy's. Rothy's are shoes. What skin do you have in the game of planning a baby shower, Rothy's?
Get out of here, Rothy's. Your shoes.
Get out of the baby shower game. Anyway, there's some articles by Martha Stewart that I pulled all about baby shower planning and etiquette. And they had me hating the article already at the use of the word etiquette.
Yeah, basically baby shower planning and etiquette was said. And I was like, already done.
Joe out. Joy out.
Joe out.
Boy, I'll talk to you. Which actually is really funny. friend of show Marie and her husband Nathan, the ones who I always talk about, I should have called them first for French, sent me a polo and they were like, poor Nathan. He's like, Marie just keeps like poking me and saying, I'll talk to you. He's like, it's really irritating. And so Bree and I were in the car and I just started recording and I was like, I'll talk to you and poked her and it was great.
Good job, Marie. Never stop doing that.
Can't stop, won't stop. I'll talk to you.
I'll talk to you. Oh, my goodness.
All right. Baby shower planning and etiquette by the brand of Martha Stewart. This is direct copied and pasted, so prepare yourself for this really great typo. It's import to have everything organized ahead of the day. Note our experts. Quote, my motto for any party I host is lists, lists, and more lists, says Mana Kadar, a lifestyle expert. Who else do we know that's a lifestyle expert? Bloosh.
I was going to say Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I don't know if he is or not, but I'd believe it.
So please, please don't ever ask me to host or plan your baby shower.
Wow, that's wild, because in the first recording that got lost, you were like, I love baby showers. I was like, plan them all.
I was like, no, I do not like the showers of babies. Sounds painful to have babies coming out of the shower. Just no. Solid no. So I did learn some things. I will share what I learned. If you love baby showers, I am so excited for you. I do not. So I'm being true to myself and I am sharing my snarky side because I said so. The end. The baby shower is usually held during the last 2 months of pregnancy, but I didn't know that. But get a sense of the vision the expected parents have for the event well in advance. It just feels like we're working for a hotel and it's like the guest experience. So I'm going to read it in this very fancy voice.
Oh,
guest comfort and experience are paramount at events, and making sure the guest of honor is considered is the best place to start. Virginia Frischkorn, the founder of Bluebird Productions, says... Oh, wow. Okay. Bluebird Productions. Cool. Etiquette dictates that a shower for a second or third time parent is a smaller party with very friends and immediate family only.
Very friends.
Just very friends. Only the very friends that have various accolades and marketing brilliant. Otherwise, no. No.
Nero.
No. Okay. Keep... This is the one section I can get on board with. I can talk about food. Sure, let's talk about food prep. Keep last minute work to a minimum by choosing foods that are very tasty and easy to prepare and can be eaten out of hand. Just one hand, though, at room temperature. Like cheese and vegetable tarts, grilled chicken salads, homemade pizzas. If they're talking about tiny little homemade pizzas, I am out. Mm-hmm. But if you are talking about give me a homemade pizza... like what I'm going to make for dinner tonight, then I am in. Also, if these little tarts are just those super little tiny ones, and you expect me to show up to a party like this and just nibble at all of these little tiny finger foods, I am not a nibble at a little tiny finger food person. When I eat, I want to eat the food. And I do not like the societal assumption that women are like birds. I do not come to just, you know, peck, 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 peck on little things because I'm a bird. I don't eat a whole lot, but when I do, I peck at things. No. I want to be at a barbecue eating meat off them ribs.
We like to do what's called a food tease.
Oh. Oh. It's just not nice.
No. Woman is not also bird.
Woman not bird.
Woman not bird.
Not bird. Not bird. Not bird. Not bird. Okay. Cool. Anyway, so talking about some games, I hate all of these. This first one, I am especially not great at. I'm not great at it. Also, nor would I play it. Thus why I am not great at it. The moment when I listen to myself and realize what I'm saying. Everyone blind guesses on the circumference of the baby bump. Whoever is the closest wins. So they said, like, you have some yarn or something and you pull it out to what you think is a circumference of all the way around the mother and her baby bump and you chop it. I don't see any potential in this game for it not to turn into fat shaming unless for some reason the mom is a model, tiny, thin little thing. Good for you. There are those in the world that you are healthy and you are well. And I'm so happy for you. And also, there are moms in the world that are a different shape, and that's wonderful. And also, this game just doesn't feel like it's going to end up being very honoring to different shapes.
Mm-hmm.
Nor do I want somebody to take the string that I guessed and hold it up and be like, wow, she thinks I'm a size 27. Like, no. No, thank you.
No.
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 The next one is guess the baby food. No.
No.
The next one after that is swaddling relay race.
No.
No. And they even said at this one, maybe make your own homemade dolls. And I'm like, what?
How does that not turn into, unless you have super crafty people there and making like the terrifying doll that needed to be burned in the fire?
Mm-mm. It just feels like a voodoo doll gone wrong.
Yeah. So many babies are about to be haunted by.
Right. Somebody walks in and they're like, look what I made. And everyone's like, oh, honey.
And then you hear just like the violin nice. Stingers from the corner as this doll is staring you down. Which I kind of want to try to imitate, but I'm afraid it would be nothing like what they actually sound like. But I'm going to do it. So like, wee, wee, wee.
Oh yeah, the super high pitch was like,
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's so hard to recreate with the human voice.
Yeah, I'm proud of you. I'm so proud of you. But yeah, it's like that Doom. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're done enough with Doom for the day. Like, we can move on.
Okay.
The next one was nostalgic board games, and their suggestion was get yourself a larger than life chessboard. And so I'm sitting here thinking, I'm planning a party for a bunch of bougie people who are going to, especially females, that are going to show up in probably summer dresses and heels. And I have a larger than life chessboard. Who is going to play that? I would find some other introverted person, and uh-huh. We would spend an intentional 3 hours playing one game of larger than life chess so that we wouldn't have to participate in the rest of the baby shower.
That's a wizard chess. This totally normal baby shower is going on. And then over on the other side of the room, Joy and somebody else are like, dun, 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 dun. The boy who lived, come to die. Oh my God.
I can't.
Oh, my goodness.
Exactly. Okay. Gotta take a little yawn here. My body needs some oxygen. Oh. Mm. Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Whip, 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 whip. Scary things are in the corner. There's just no good ending for this. Okay, the next activity was make your own tea bags. What? Who wants to do that?
No.
They said, this is a beautiful party favor where wherever tea is served, and we love that it doubles as an activity for everyone. Let guests have some fun putting together a custom tea blend, then tuk-tuk each inside a paper-folded envelope paired with a tiny gold-plated spoon.
Why was tuck in there twice?
Tuk-tuk. And then, everyone, we will tuk-tuk each inside a paper-folded envelope with a tiny gold-plated spoon.
Tuk-tuk, spelled differently, is a vehicle.
Correct.
So I'm just imagining these tea bags getting, like, wildly transported by tuk-tuks to the place where the envelopes are.
And then we will tuck your tea bag away.
It's like...
Yeah.
Oh, my good.
And also, who wants a gold-plated spoon?
Mm.
Not me. They said, guess who? In this classic game, guests are encouraged to make their guess of who's who in a set of photographs. Framed baby pictures of the parents-to-be are tucked amid the lush greenery spilling over the mantle.
See, I didn't know we were supposed to have a lush greenery on the mantle.
And a mantle.
Yeah. And it's too much.
But what's the point? Guess who? But it's framed pictures of the parents-to-be. So if you're there, you should at least be like, that's the mom.
You got a 50-50 chance.
That's the other parent. Because it's not even binary. It could just not be a mom. I don't know. Parents-to-be, whatever. Everyone decorates a cupcake. Okay, that sounds okay. Also, what are you going to do with all those cupcake decorating materials afterwards? You're just going to be stuck with it for the rest of your life. You're going to die, and your kids are going to go through your stuff and be like, why? Why do we have so much cupcake decorating stuff? So anyway, one of
the... Have we tapped into a very specific niche fear here? Joya's sorting through like her eventual parents' inheritance. Like, why? Why is there so much cupcake decorating stuff? I can't.
And Duck Chuck tea bags with gold-plated spoons.
No.
The catch of this is everybody eats their cupcake, and one of the cupcakes has a plastic baby inside of it.
What? That's a...
So whoever finds that plastic baby is next in line to have a baby.
And also probably needs dental work.
Also, ew. Just
gross.
What is the food safety of baking plastic into a cupcake?
Yeah.
No. There's the next one called What's in the Bag? Keep guests guessing with this practical game. Put at least 10 common useful baby items inside a diaper bag. A bib, teething ring, rattle, bottle, and diaper are just a few goodies that are also fairly inexpensive. Give each guest a pen and paper before passing the diaper bag around. Without looking, each person should stick a hand inside the bag. Sounds very dangerous. And identify as many items as possible. Give everybody 2 minutes to feel around. No, you get 30 seconds.
2 minutes? That's so long.
So if you have like 30 people there and you give each person 2 minutes, you are spending 58 minutes sitting in a circle watching somebody else put their hand in a diaper bag.
No.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm just going to stop there. Another site talked about baby shower prices, right? I would consider playing that, but only if you actually created the Price is Right props. Mm-hmm. So there's that.
Go all out.
When I Googled baby showers gone wrong, I found a lot of articles about people dying during ill-planned gender reveal explosions.
Wow.
So be careful. Gender reveals are risky. And I've also been stuck at baby showers with having to watch the parent-to-be open every single gift.
Mm-mm.
This is a bad idea.
Mm-mm.
Just say no. Any thoughts on baby showers before we move on?
Yeah, I think just that it's...
Did you freeze again?
I was trying to fake you out.
You were. You're doing a very great job. And I was just like thinking through all the options of why didn't I start a recording on my end. Of course, the power would go out again. Of course, it would happen in the middle of this. And then I don't want to do all of that all over again.
I probably could have held it like a little longer. But the smile was like starting to like creep up the corners of my mouth. I was like, oh, the jig is up.
Suppose
I had to.
Anyway, did you have actual thoughts on baby showers?
No, I did not.
Great. Good job, you got me. It's like anytime I work an event and suddenly there's silence, it's like, oh my gosh, what happened? Silence is not golden. Silence is panic. Okay. Fine.
What a joyism.
Silence is panic.
Silence is not golden. Silence is panic.
yeah, everybody on the tech team just freaks out. Oh my gosh, did their mic not work? What's happening? Okay, let's talk about Jackson Pollock. Because, you know, 14 artists have agreed and was going to be 15. But then this guy described himself as Jackson Pollock-esque and Craig hates it. So Wikipedia, Paul Jackson Pollock lived from January 28th, 1912 to August 11, 1956, was an American painter and major figure in the abstract expressionist movement. He was widely noticed for his drip technique of pouring or splashing liquid household paint onto a horizontal surface, enabling him to view and paint his canvases from all angles. It was also called all-over painting and action painting, since he covered the entire canvas and used the force of his whole body to paint, often in a frenetic dancing style. This extreme form of abstraction divided the critics. Some praised the immediacy of the creation, while others derided from the random effects. In 2016, Pollock's painting titled Number 17A was reported to have fetched $200 million U.S. dollars in a private purchase.
Wow.
Wow! So I pulled some fun little notable things from Wikipedia about his history that I found very, very interesting. While living in Vermont Square neighborhood of Los Angeles, he was enrolled at Manual Arts High School, from which he was expelled. He'd already been expelled in 1928 from another high school. In his early life, he explored Native American culture while on surveying trips with his father. He was also heavily influenced by Mexican muralists, particularly José Clemente Orozco, whose fresco Prometheus he would later call the greatest painting in North America. Pollock was introduced to the use of liquid paint in 1936 at an experimental workshop in New York City by the Mexican muralist David Alfaro Siqueiros. I'm sorry if I butchered that. He later used paint pouring as one of several techniques on canvases of the early 1940s, such as male and female and composition with pouring one. Great. So this is where he started playing with his drip technique. At the peak of his fame, Pollock abruptly abandoned the drip style. His drip paintings were influenced by the artist Janet Sobel, the art critic. Clement Greenberg would later report that Pollock admitted to him that Sobel's work had made an impression on him. Cool. Pollock's work after 1951 was darker in color, including a collection painted in black on unprimed canvases. These paintings have been referred to as his black pourings. When he exhibited them at the Betty Parsons Gallery in New York, none of them sold. Parsons later sold one to a friend at half price. These works show Pollock attempting to find a balance between abstraction and depictions of the figure. I'm always curious about how people get to where they are. Mm-hmm. So just seeing that, like, he had a not ideal growing up, but he had a fascination, and that fascination led him to a workshop with a Mexican muralist who then, like, led him to drip technique, which led him to this, which led him to that. And he's trying to deal with, like, how do I represent myself? So he later returned to using color and continued with figurative elements. Excuse me. He moved all this stuff to a more commercial gallery, and the demand for his work from collectors was great. So in response to this pressure, along with personal frustration, his alcoholism deepened. So this is another one of those things that fascinates me of, like, how does fame or how does demand affect who people are and who they become?
Mm-hmm. Have you read Elizabeth Gilbert's book, Big Magic?
I have. Okay. So good.
If you hadn't, I was going to recommend that, because she talks about artists and their tendency to gravitate towards addictions and
yep.
things like that as coping mechanisms, partially as a response to pressure and partially as, like, they almost get in this vein of, like, I can't create without sort of indulging my darker side, like my vices, like mm-hmm. that. And the two become sort of inseparable, and
right.
she looks at people like Kurt Cobain and stuff like that, where this sort of darkness and this unhealthy side becomes synonymous with the art and almost glorified in a way that right. she thinks is dangerous and unnecessary. Fascinating
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. I haven't read that book in a very long time. I would like to read it again.
Yeah. It's kind of what I've been meaning to gravitate back to. It's a good one.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the songs on my upcoming album is named from a concept in that book.
What's it called?
Trickster Energy.
Ooh, I'm excited to hear it. Yeah. Let's talk about that more in the booths. I want to hear how that's going.
Sweet.
And if you want to hear how that's going as well, tune into the Hucking Booths, which you can access as a patron of Parks and Rewatch. Patreon.com/rewatchparks. Continuing to evade the viewer's search for figurative elements in his paintings, Pollock abandoned titles and started numbering his works. This actually feels brilliant to me because naming things feels very hard to me.
Mm-hmm.
He said about this, look passively and try to receive what the painting has to offer and not bring a subject matter or preconceived idea of what they are to be looking for. His wife said he used to give his pictures conventional titles, but now he simply numbers them. Numbers are neutral. They make people look at a picture for what it is, pure painting. So since I'm not a super art human, I'm very curious. Do any of you find meeting or residence in Jackson Pollock's art? I would love to hear about it. Go ahead and post in our Facebook group, the official Parks and Rewatch fan club.
Man, look at you with the organic plugs.
Plugging it away. And now it's time for the thing we're all exciting for. We are exciting for. Wow. Excited for the Kool-Aid guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because he makes it look easy. So Mental Floss had a fun article about the history/origin of the Kool-Aid man. When Robert Scholar joined the General Foods marketing team at Gray Advertising in 1988, it did not take him long to realize there were certain perks that came with the job. As the executive behind the Kool-Aid campaign, Scholar inherited the Kool-Aid man, the anthropomorphic pitcher of sugar water. Ooh, when they play it like that, it's not very great.
I know.
That had been a staple of the brand for more than a decade. Two stories stand out. The first, Scholar says, is when he was working late one night and decided to try on the Kool-Aid man's fiberglass costume for himself. That sounds awful. He said it was like being inside a Christmas ornament. It's hard to hear anything in there, Scholar tells Mental Floss. You just hope you don't fall down. The second was when Scholar got caught up in the trend of New York professionals putting on elaborate birthday parties for their kids. Scholar asked Richard Berg, the voice of Kool-Aid Man's "Oh yeah" catchphrase, to actually wear the costume for a personal appearance at his son's 6th birthday party. Normally, Berg just recorded the line. It was the voice in the costume, which was a first, Scholar says, and half the kids were frightened to death, which means there was a murder at this birthday party. Half the kids. R.I.P. Fortunately, that was hardly the typical reaction. Introduced in 1975, Kool-Aid Man became one of the most beloved characters in advertising history, with a recognition factor that sometimes outpaced that of Ronald McDonald. He got his own video game, his own comic book, and his own museum display in Hastings, Nebraska. Have you been there?
I have not been to the display, but Hastings is well known for Kool-Aid.
All right, well, next time you have a concert in Hastings, please go see the display.
I will do my best.
Thank you. Scholar recalls that the iconic breaking through the wall sequence wasn't necessarily planned. From what I've heard, someone on the set said that Kool-Aid Man really had to make an entrance, and someone else, maybe a producer, suggested he come through the wall. Breakaway bricks were set up, and the character's fiberglass shell, the same material used for a Corvette Stingray, Scholar says, effectively became a wrecking ball.
This there it is. Great.
I know. As Kool-Aid Man's star grew, so did his opportunities to branch out. The property got its own Marvel comic, The Adventures of Kool-Aid Man, as well as an Atari 2600 video game. The latter could be redeemed with 125 points earned from purchasing Kool-Aid, which amounts to about 62.5 gallons of sugar water. Or you could also just use 30 points and spend $10.
So have you seen the video clip anywhere of... oh, why am I forgetting his name? Tom Segura and this other comedian that have a podcast together. I can't remember what the other one's name is. I know who he is. But they discover in real time, like Tom Segura discovers in real time that the other guy starts his day every day. He has one of those giant like water thermos things, and he fills it with Kool-Aid every day.
What? Brent Kreischer?
Yeah, yeah.
Drinks a gallon of Kool-Aid a day.
Yeah, you gotta watch the clip because it just made me scream laughing.
All right, I'll leave that open. And now it's time for our likes and dislikes, where we talk about what we liked and what we didn't like so much. Joe, what did you like?
I liked Leslie and Andy's reactions to Ron's baby.
Why? Why those two specifically?
I just love Andy's cool baby.
Yeah. And Leslie just being like,
and
what?
Leslie just freaking out like, you have a baby.
Just like that. Yep.
Whose baby is that?
What?
Yeah, yep. That was great. I like that John's middle name is redacted.
Of course it is. I wouldn't expect anything different.
And then, like his father, he is a fan of silence.
Mm-hmm.
I just love how much the baby and Ron are basically the same person.
Yes. Yes.
And I like Ron saying to just let Leslie tire herself out.
Brilliant.
The fatherhood is strong with Ron in this episode. It's great.
Well, it's also just another point of awareness of his relationship with Leslie. Like, oh, she freaks out, but whatever. Yeah. Let her tire herself out.
I like the Pawnee Journal calling Oren's act. Why would anyone do this?
And that's what April quotes. Like, she says it like it's an accolade.
Yes. It's so good. I like Andy thinking Grant Larson is Elton John.
Obviously.
I like the hurt that you can see on Ben's face as he tells Tom, you said you genuinely valued my business acumen. Also, I'm your boss. I like the Pawnee government onesie being the thing that pushes Ron over the edge.
Yep.
Because of course it was.
And Gail apparently doesn't know anything about Ron.
Right.
Gail.
And I like Andy immediately and literally attempting to knock down the wall.
You got it, boss.
It's not as easy as the Kool-Aid man makes it look.
Well.
I like Ron announcing that the third floor is a paradise thanks to a broken radiator and a conveniently placed toolbox.
Yep. I actually wanted him to pull the toolbox out of the bottom of the stroller.
Ooh, that would have been good too. Riding strapped with a toolbox at all times.
Obviously.
I like Jam being on board once he's snacking on beef jerky.
Yep.
I just love that quick cut back to him where he's actually really okay. Like, he's got his jerky. He's happy.
Just that moment where he's just like, oh, okay, great. Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, I got some jerky, guys.
I love the CGI bees. Because, I mean, of course you couldn't film this with real bees, but it just made me think of how funny it must have been to film the bee scene with nothing actually happening.
Nothing happening. Kind of like going back to the dance scenes at E720.
Yeah.
Like, there's no music in there.
No.
Yeah.
It's so good. Like, that would have been hard to film with a straight face, I think, without breaking into laughter, because everyone's just running around and screaming and there's nothing actually going on.
But are they really screaming, or are they just acting like they're screaming and the screams got added in later?
That seems like a lot of work. We've already got to add CGI bees. I like this quote from Ron that starts with him giggling and then saying, my son is several weeks old. He's quite familiar with the sound of power tools.
Like, who do you people think you are? Psh.
I like Craig's poking his head back in and saying, somebody follow me. I'm distraught.
Yeah.
So good. I like Ron offering the work crew 2 months paid vacation and the ability to take credit for his work, which will be flawless.
Obviously.
I like that Leslie's black eye distraction ensemble somehow attracts more attention to her black eye.
Well, did you see that her necklace had holographic eyeballs on it?
Yes, I did.
What? Leslie?
Grant Larson is actually one of my favorite late game additions to the show. It's not a huge role, but there's just something about him that is strangely endearing, like comforting. I don't know. He just got this presence that I like a lot.
Yeah, he's a good one.
And then my last like is Ron bringing it home with another wise speech.
That's right.
So yes, what did you like about this episode?
Andy. Oh, Ron, cool baby. Ron being like, thank you, Andrew. And then just all the things that you've already talked about with the baby. Except for at the end, this is the one thing you didn't say, is when Leslie leaves and Ron's like, and she's like, what? And he's like, nothing, clearing my throat.
That was great.
I love the whole Unity Concert Committee. This feels like a really good and needed storyline, like bringing good instead of just the world against Leslie or Leslie against a perceived enemy of her ego and planning.
Mm-hmm.
So yes to that. I love Craig, and I'm actually shocked at how many people on the internet hate Craig.
Like, really?
Yeah, the Reddit threads that were going live as these episodes were going live, people are just, they just can't. They're like, he needs like two lines and that's it. I'm like, but I love Craig.
I don't think the world was ready for Craig when this show was airing.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I don't know how they chose him. I don't know why they chose when he was going to yell, but I love it. Larry's scared face when the banner unfurls is priceless. I happened to pause it and I did not notice his face until I paused it and was like, ha ha, good job, Jim O'Hare. Good job. I do really like Tom finding his groove as a human, as a character, as an employee.
Mm-hmm.
That feels really good to me. I love everyone fawning over baby John and Ron's inability to handle it. And how he just violently throws the onesie into the trash and storms away. I like Andy trying to knock the wall down. And I had a thought. I'm wondering if they maybe shot episodes out of order. Because, you know, Leslie's line of she painted over that a week ago, but it's the exact same. Makes me think maybe they shot this before they repainted it for that previous episode.
That could be.
Which would make sense to me. Okay, love Ron's pure joy at the third floor. He just, his moment of, I can't think of anything more beautiful to share with my son. So good. And then the red pine and his like closing monologue of, this is the best day I've ever spent in a government building and I got to share it with my son. He now has the look of pride on his face from a day of good labor, or he pooped. Yep.
Either way, well done, John.
Well done, John. I love the moment of Andy being like, don't worry, babe, I'll protect you. And she fully crawls under his hoodie.
Yes.
I love that. Yes. I love everybody thinking the bees were a prank, which Leslie totally could have ridden the wave and played with that. Mm-hmm. Like, ultimately, I'm glad she chose the truth. But like, how do you pull off most of the people being stung being from Eagleton? And how did you get your bees into that wall, and how long did it take to plan this hilarious bee prank on Eagleton? And they were not my bees, Trod. This was not a prank. I love the whole small thing about a bee hole. They use that just enough. If they would have used that any more than what they did, it would have been
too much.
But just a little touch of bee hole. And then the moment of when Leslie's like, tell Grant I need to reschedule because I'm trying to fix my bee hole disaster. The shot right after that is April just staring at the camera, dipping her tea bag in and out of her pot. Like, yes.
Yes. That was
April
great.
Breaking the fourth wall. Priceless.
Great.
I love how Craig can't handle all the fighting. It's like Thanksgiving 2004 all over again. Don't even ask. Somebody follow me. I'm distraught. I love Tom's perfect sum up of how boring listening to Ben is. It's like listening to a TED talk by The Color Beige. You're right. I like that the best friend title is now officially out there by Jam. Good job, Joe.
Yes.
Way to remember it. I'm glad we got to talk about that. I love the genuine empathy between April and Leslie.
Mm-hmm.
With April actually trying. Like, it's not good news. I just wanted you to have a brief moment of happiness before you got sadder. And I'm sorry this town keeps being stupid and letting you down. It sucks. And then Leslie being able to actually respond and be like, stinking turd nugget, everything sucks. And then she's like, and now I get to meet with Grant Larson. And April's like, and you're also wearing a tie-dye t-shirt. Funny. I love the loop back to the River Grant application. That feels really good to me. And the Liam Bonneville statement from earlier, like how that gets brought back several times in this episode. Mm-hmm. I love bacon pillows. I love Ben stepping in for Tom even when Tom ran him over. And I love the hard-hitting wisdom bite from Ron of, you like fixing this town, Leslie. You always have. You know it's an uphill battle, but you love to struggle. And you've already done a lot to make this town better. That's right. I do have three mid-likes. Leslie's banner preparedness. It's great, and the presentation is flawless. And also, that means there's no room for spontaneity in the moment then, because she had to plan that out ahead of time. But yet she didn't technically know the status of things when she walked into the room. And so it just kind of feels sus.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, and also, I like Tom owning his passion, and I also dislike Tom pooping on others to make himself look good. Mm-hmm. Slash being borderline unprofessional of like calling out Trisha's new highlights, which is super awkward. No thanks. And also how he apparently now they are blowing outside my window. When we started the first recording, that has since failed. They were mowing outside, so now they're blowing. Mowing and blowing. The Dorkosaurus thing is really funny, but also it's at the cost of Ben's character, mm-hmm. which as a personal thing, I'm just not a fan of. The Mitch introduction is a huge part of Tom's story moving forward, but it also feels kind of odd. And this is like showing my lack of life experience, but does it really just happen like that? That feels way too easy.
Yeah, I don't know.
So there's that. What did you dislike?
Just a few things. I dislike the Department of the Interior having a resident bad boy. That just is not, I don't know. It's not that funny to me, I guess.
Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Is that...
Yeah, like, I don't know. I just didn't land. And then April's comment to Leslie about the negative people being the minority that's shouting louder is on point, but also it just makes me real life sad. So...
Mm-hmm.
Had to dislike that one. What did you dislike about this episode?
Leslie just still feels so out of touch. Like when they're talking about the press conference and she's like, today might be the day I crowd surf. What? Tom's ideas just still feel so desperate and sad and unnecessary. I don't like Jam being an antagonist just for the attention of it. I don't like Mike Patterson ambushing Leslie and blaming her for the press attention. I don't like that Grant is wearing the same outfit at both meetings, both of them, though I guess we're supposed to believe that time has passed.
Mm-hmm.
Sus.
Like now maybe he's another one of those like might be a robot politicians.
He
literally didn't go anywhere. He just stood in the hallway and stared ahead until it was time for him to come back.
Plausible. Although he seems more alive than what's his face in DC.
Well, yeah, they've made upgrades since then. They've figured some stuff out. Some software patches, you know?
Wow. Now it's time. Now it's time for the Coronation of the Beautiful Rule Breaking Moth, the part where we talk about what we really, really, really liked and stood out. Joe?
I love the payoff of Leslie's river cleanup proposal being discovered and getting Leslie the National Parks job offer.
Yeah.
I mentioned it then when we covered that episode. That is such a great payoff as far as the writing goes.
Yeah.
I just love that. I love that detail.
Yep. Are you going to ask me about mine or am I just going to say it?
I was about to, but then I freaked out because I didn't.
Okay. Well, mine is seeing Ron in a place of pure joy with his son, with good hard work and discovering the red pine.
Yeah.
That made me really happy.
This is a whole lot of zen whenever you flip over to Ron in this episode.
Mm-hmm. And now it's time
for
the shaming
of the
Jerry. Part of the show where we shame one particular thing for bringing the episode down or being unnecessarily annoying. Do you know what I just realized? We should have changed this segment to match whatever his name is the episode. So now it's time for the shaming of the Larry. Joe, who or what's your Larry?
I don't know. It's kind of tough to put my finger on in this episode. Like, I know it's there. But yeah, I think we're sort of right on the verge of being past sort of this little transitional point in the show that we've talked about and some of the people in our Facebook group have talked about. I think I'm just ready for it to be done. I'm ready for something new. I'm kind of ready for Leslie's arcs in the episodes to kind of stop being about the same stuff.
Yep.
I'm just ready for that to be over. So if anything, it just feels like some elements are dragging while others are picking up.
Yep. Totally.
Yeah. So who or what is your Jerry?
I got a little nitpicky on this one just because it's the one thing that drove me nuts. Mike Patterson's reporting ethics. It's not how you do journalism, Mike Patterson.
Yeah. I did love, though, how brilliantly that whole scene satired how real media spins things and twists things and just makes stuff up. Like, it's one of those things that it's very frustrating, but it's so smart.
Yep, totally.
And now it's time for the awarding of the Lil Sebastians, the ceremony in which we rate each episode against the entire catalog of Parks and Recreation episodes by awarding it between 1 and 5 Lil Sebastians. Joy!
Me!
How many Lil Sebastians would you rate the wall?
4. So, like, kind of going back to the shaming of the Larry, it's like, your comment of like, it's tough to put my finger on what was kind of like about this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was a good episode, but it wasn't like a great episode, but it was above average. So I'm giving it 4.
Yeah. Land squarely in 4. And if anything, I think that tough to define is kind of a good sign.
Yeah.
Rather than being like, this annoyed me. Like, this was so obviously the thing that brought the show down. The fact that those things are getting, I think, a little bit harder to define means that we're heading into a better stretch of episodes.
Praise be.
Praise be.
Mm.
Wanda.
Mawanda. Yes, Majan.
And now.
Praise be to the scene.
Oh my goodness. I love those episodes.
That's
for those of you who know what we're talking
John
about.
John Oliver, televangelist. Please watch.
So good. Our Lady of Perpetual Exemption.
We don't want your seeds.
And now it's time to ask that all important question.
Where in the world is John Raphael?
As always, this segment is for episodes where the character is not featured. We speculate where he might be and what he might be doing. Joy! I suppose you should probably tell us where you think John Raphael is in this episode.
Moses supposes his nose is the roses, but Moses supposes erroneously. Anyway, classic little musical reference there. I think the gang is scrambling. That was their prize beehive. They chose to build it in that location because all signs, all the data to this point has pointed to Eagleton and Pawnee being at war forever. Who were they to know that that exact spot, which happens to be exactly 3/8 of the way along the length of the wall, measuring from the north side first,
obviously.
Would be the one that was struck. What are they going to do now? They just got orders in for their special honey.
Yeah, that would have been a safe bet to their strategy to put it there. But
3/8. Who would have thought 3/8?
Yeah. Wow.
What about you, Joe?
Mine also skews toward the raccoon gang today. This one's all about Randy.
Good job, Randy.
Because
I'll
talk to you. John Ralphio mentioned to Randy about Tom passing on the dry cleaning chemical idea because mm-hmm. it's boring. And of course, JR thinks it's boring too. Mm. But Randy, being the organized fellow that he is, swiped the plans from Ben's office and is using them to generate a new revenue stream for the gang.
Wow. What prowess.
Mm-hmm.
Such acumen.
He saw that spreadsheet and that was right up his alley.
Yes, please.
Go, Randy. And now it's time for Johnny Karate's Karate Moves to Success, an inspirational segment in which we apply the karate moves to success in our own lives. Joy, what would you like to karate chop this week?
Feeling at low capacity. It lately it's just felt like right when I finally think I'm catching up on energy, I just get set back. And so like, I feel like this is an appropriate moment to say the world we live in right now is very heavy and very unsafe, and you can't even go to school and feel safe. Like my heart is just, it's hurting so much for what's happening in our world. Mm-hmm. So if you, like me, are feeling in low power mode, I'm with you. It's okay to be in low power mode. What about you?
I'm going to karate chop mind blanks.
Uh-oh. What happened?
Because I had a really bad one last weekend and it was dumb.
Oh.
So I think I might have mentioned it before in the show on the main feed. I don't remember. I spent a lot of time learning this really difficult solo for a song that we do that I play with the country artists I play for. It's like a 3-minute solo and it's ridiculously complex. And I spent days where all I did for hours was learn this song. Like I know it front and back, every single note. And we had a really big show last weekend. We were direct support for Eddie Montgomery of Montgomery Gentry. And it was a bigger deal. One of our first bigger shows for the summer. And I really wanted to make sure I nailed that solo. I had nailed it every time I played it live so far. And so we're backstage while Luke's doing his acoustic set. And I just start going over. I was like, I've got my guitar on me for going back out for our second half of the set. I'm just going to go over this solo. Mm-hmm. You know, just go over the movements of it silently there backstage. All of a sudden, I get probably like a fourth of the way through the solo and I couldn't remember how it went.
Oh my gosh.
There was this whole like movement of the solo that was just gone from my brain, like deleted.
That is terrifying.
Like files dumped. And I started freaking out and I kept like, I tried going back to the beginning and going all the way up to it. And I tried all these different things to try to get my muscle memory to click and my memory to click. And I couldn't get it. And I had to go back on stage and I was like, well, I guess I'll just kind of hope that when I'm actually doing it and like hearing, you know, I'm able to hear what I'm doing, it'll just come back like it has every time before. It didn't.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
And I just boofed that whole part of the solo. I managed to recover, I think, fairly quickly, but like I've seen the videos that some people took from that night, and it's very obvious that I just didn't know that part. And I spent so much time on that song. That was terrifying. And
that
I was
is
like
so disappointing. I'm so sorry.
It was just a total mind dump of just that one part of the solo. I remember the rest of it fine. And it was like, why did you leave me? So, yeah. Mind blanks are not fun. But that being said, who do you want to be nice to this week?
If you've never thought about it before, or maybe if you've done this before but haven't done it in a while, I would like to present for your consideration therapy / counseling, whatever you want to call it. I am so much a fan of it, and I am so much of a better human because I've got a counselor. She helps me untangle the hairball of anxiety in my head and helps me figure out how to care for myself in the midst of caring for others. Shout out, Emily. I'll talk to you.
I'll talk to you.
All right, Joe.
My Be Nice recommendation this week. Oh my goodness. It's Top Gun Maverick.
Oh my God.
Here's the thing. I haven't even seen it yet. I'm seeing it tonight as of us recording this. But it's my recommendation because that is how much faith I have that this is going to be the best movie of the year.
Oh my gosh.
And we've talked about this after 2 long years of hope deferred, making my heart sick of whether or not I'd ever see this movie tonight. I'm finally gonna go see it. Ah! And then I smashed the keyboard a lot because of how excited I am.
And it is my job as your co-host to now read your keyboard smash.
Thank you. Thank you for interpreting.
Active blossom on. West Griffin, Drake freaking, Dick and Drake, Snit, freaking, chicken lip.
And that is the ancient Norse translation of why I'm so excited. It was very eloquent.
Hallelujah. Let it be so.
Yes, I'm so excited. All right, Joy, take us to that outro.
Pretty sure I've done this one before, but it was a request, so I'm going to do it again. Joe, give me a word.
Let's do red pine.
When I find myself on the third floor, ripping up really gross carpet, all I hope is for some red pine. And when I happen to find it underneath the rat urine-soaked carpet, I can't even breathe. Because I technically should be wearing a respirator because, wow, urine now in the air with a baby in the room. Mm-hmm. Let me breathe. Let me breathe. Let me breathe. Let me breathe. I'm just gonna sand out these urine stains. Hit me with another word.
You are so good at this.
Yes.
Ah. Like, I'm hearing this beautiful ukulele version of Let It Be that involves rat urine. Things I never, ever thought would happen in my life. Okay. Kool-Aid Man.
Kool-Aid Man. And when I have a birthday party that I need, some entertainment... And Johnny Karate can't be there because he's not actually a real character and or he moved somewhere else and they kicked him off the TV and whatever. Let it be. And in my hour of panic, I realize it's standing right there in front of me. That packet of sugar water. I am gonna call the Kool-Aid Man. That anthropomorphic fiber glass costume with a creepy person in it who scares children half to death is gonna show up at my door. And then, just when the kids thought the party was over, look at those breakaway bricks and this intense music. He breaks through the wall. Here he is, the Kool-Aid Man. He broke through those fake bricks. I put them together so great that you wouldn't even know they were fake. Here he is, the Kool-Aid Man. He is here for you. Speaking words of wisdom. I'll talk to you.
Could you tag that with speaking words of wisdom? Oh, yeah.
Speaking words of wisdom. Oh, yeah.
Yes. That was so good. That was so good.
All right, do that thing you do at the end.
Thank you, everyone, for hanging out with us. I just sometimes can't with how good Joy is at these things. If you would like more Parks and Rewatch in your life, you can follow us on Instagram at Rewatch Parks. You can join the official Parks and Rewatch fan club on Facebook. If you'd like to support this show, help us keep making these episodes going forward, you can head over to patreon.com/parksandrewatch. And if you sign up at the Pawnee Goddess or Swanson Tears, you get instant access to The Hucking Booths, our after show exclusively for patrons. If you're an email type of person, you can send us an email at rewatchparks@gmail.com. And if you are enjoying our show, it'd mean the world to us if you would leave us a rating on Spotify and a rating and review on Apple Podcasts.
Let it be. Just let it be.
Mm-hmm. Whisper words of wisdom.
Oh, yeah. What do we say, Joe?
Oh, yeah.
Zazza, 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 yeah.
What was that? We're just making noises now.
That's what we do.